Milk, minute, milk, minute, milk, minute, yeah.
Milk, 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 milk.
This is Maureen Farrell.
And Heather O'Neill.
And this is the Milk Minute.
We're midwives and lactation professionals,
bringing you the most up-to-date evidence for all things lactation,
so you can feel more confident about feeding your baby,
body positivity,
relationships,
and mental health.
Plus, we laugh a little or a lot along the way.
So join us for another episode.
Okay, welcome to a rapid-fire lightning round question-answer episode of the Milk Minute Podcast.
We have had so many questions emailed into us that I have, been kind of putting off answering because we've been so busy creating new content for you. So I said, why don't we just do an episode where we answer all of these questions at once and we just rapid fire smush them all together and give you lots of knowledge all at the same time.
Yes, this is going to be short form answers only. And for those of you who already listened to us in double time, like maybe go back to one time speed.
So first, I just want to give a quick shout out to Beth Kristen from Norway. She emailed us to let us know that she actually has been a NICU nurse for 19 years in Norway, and she loves hearing about what we're doing in America, and she was kind of sharing with me a little bit about what they're doing in Norway, and she let me know that they often use colostrum as an immunomodulatory therapy, and they put a little bit of the colostrum in the cheek of the baby for the intestinal flora. That way the baby can poop early after birth. And also they acknowledge there that colostrum helps against nosocomial infection or infections that happen because you're in a hospital, as well as necrotizing enterocolitis. So they do use colostrum as medicine in Norway, and we are very, very glad to know that that's happening over there. And thank you so much for sharing from across the ocean. We love that.
Yeah, I just watched a documentary about Norway with my child when she was sick for no reason.
Oh, I would love to go to Norway and visit Beth and visit the NICU and see how things
see
are
their,
over there.
Like thousands of miles of coastline. It's pretty crazy.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, so gorgeous, I bet. Okay, well, Beth, thanks for writing in. And if any of you are around the world and want to write in, you can do that as well. Let's take a quick minute to thank a sponsor, and then we're going to dive right into our questions.
All right, it's Maureen here, and I want to tell you that I have finally set up a link so you can instantly book virtual lactation consults with me.
Thank the Lord.
I know, Heather. It took me a long time to take the leap from in-person visits to virtual, but I did it.
You're going to love it. I love doing virtual consults. They are the best. It serves more people. I'm so glad you took the plunge.
Thank you. And if you guys out there want to book some time with me, you can go to highlandbirthsupport.com and then click on my lactation services tab.
Is that H-I-G-H-L-A-N-D?
Yes.
Okay.
I will see you on Zoom, everybody.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Here we go. Strap in. We're getting real today. We're real every day, but we're getting faster in our realness. Okay. Today is a question from Lauren. Lauren says, hi there. I am happy to have found your podcast. I have a question about combo feeding. My little guy is 4 months old, and my lactation consultant and I determined I have low supply due to insufficient glandular tissue. Therefore, after 15 to 20 minutes at the breast, I give my little one a bottle of formula, sometimes mixed with expressed milk. How do I determine how much to supplement after feeds? I have used a scale to calculate transfer weights, which was helpful, but formula doesn't change in composition like breast milk does, so I don't know how much to give as my baby gets older. My consultant thought my pediatrician could help more with this. She said to watch his cues. I've always had a hard time with this because I swear my baby would live on the boob if he could. He's gaining very well now, not quite on the curve yet, so that leads me to believe I'm doing something right over here. It's difficult to fully explain our situation, so I hope that's enough detail to get the conversation started. Thanks so much, Lauren.
Okay. Combo feeding is a little bit tricky because every scenario is going to be something different. In general, if we are feeding mostly breast milk, it tends to work to stick to the volume of breast milk that would be appropriate. When we start to feed more formula than breast milk, we're going to have to start changing that volume to be what's more recommended for formula.
Yeah. And also, I want to just acknowledge the normal developmental changes of babies as they get older. So when your baby is 1 month old, they don't do anything but lay around and eat, sleep, yes, and poop. When you have a 6 month old, they are active, they're on the move, and they don't want to be eating all day long. So when they start spacing out their feedings, you have to increase the formula, which is why at 6 months old, formula fed babies are getting like sometimes 6 ounces at a time. But you know, we really do kind of have to acknowledge the fact also that if you have a normal, healthy baby that is neurologically intact, they can tell you when they're hungry. So you can always start with maybe like 5, especially if you're more formula fed than breastfed at that point. Like 5 ounces might be a good place to start. And if they look like they want more, you can give them more.
Yeah. And it's okay to go in for extra weights with your doctor, you know, or to keep track at home, especially in that first month or two of combo feeding where you're like, what are we doing? I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. Baby's cues are weird. It's fine. Just keep track of baby's weight. And if you are gaining at an acceptable rate, you've probably found a good sweet spot.
Yeah. And I would say like a lot of formula babies eat about 30 ounces a day, which is a little bit more sometimes than breastfed babies, not always, but it's more about getting that 30 ounces in 5 feeds instead of 8 to 10, because right now they're sleeping through the night and they're busy during the day. So it's mostly a recommendation just to let people know that you still have to get in this much during the daytime, despite naps and despite sleeping through the night and their busy bodies.
Okay. Good luck with that. Next question.
Okay, our next question is from Andy Ward. Andy says, hey ladies, since you are my go-tos for all things baby, I have a potential situation I need advice on. As you know, I am 21 weeks pregnant, due 3/13. Baby girl is a healthy, happy as a clam little fetus, and I'm interviewing for a new job. I am currently an outpatient ortho PT and am quite tired of it. I've secured an interview for a full-time pelvic health position at a local hospital outpatient facility, a passion of mine that I have been too chicken to make the change towards until now. My first interview is with the team on Zoom. They obviously won't see my adorable bump, but if/when I go in person, bam, there she is. Ohio law states employers do not have to offer FMLA until you're with the company for 12 months, which will obviously not be the case. My thought is to just crush the interview, see them in person, hope they love me, and then try and negotiate for extended leave past the silly 6-week short-term disability, which is not enough and I will not tolerate. I know I'm not required to disclose my status initially, but I think they can ask me. Not 100% sure on that one. Any advice if I should just tell them immediately or wait? Are there any rights I'm not aware of? Trying to maneuver this appropriately for all parties. I would think if they work in pelvic health, they would understand the importance of extended leave for mom and baby and know what benefits I would bring to my future patients and the passion for the specialty. Sorry it's long-winded. Let me know if you have any thoughts at all. Andy.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I really wish I could say that, oh, like it's a pelvic health center. Of course they'll be compassionate about your maternity leave. But no, like we know, you know, from OBs and L&D nurses, like those departments can be the least compassionate about leave and lactation, all of that. So no guarantee there.
We can direct you to the Center for Work-Life Law hotline, though, which is free, and we will link that episode in the show notes because we interviewed Juliana Franco, who is a lawyer for the Center for Work-Life Law, and they can review your particular state's laws regarding pregnancy and work and also the rights you have after, and they can also work with your provider to write a prescription for you that might give you the time off you need without putting you in a situation where you're so limited that they have a reason to fire you.
Right. But so far, I think you have a pretty solid plan. I would just double check your state's laws. I'm not an expert, but they do on the website for the Center for Work-Life Law, which is pregnantatwork.org. They have PDFs on each state's laws and federal laws regarding being pregnant at work and breastfeeding at work. Okay. Well, good luck with that. I know you will smash that interview, and I hope that they are smart enough to hire you and negotiate with you. Well, Heather, I have a question for you. I'm pulling an anonymous question from our Facebook group. And so this one comes with a picture of pumped milk, and the right side has more milk and it is whiter, and the left side has less milk and it is more yellow. And this person is asking, why is that? Is her baby getting sick? You know, is it because she nursed on the left side last, and that's why there's less. She's confused about this.
Okay, well, did it say how old her baby is?
No.
Okay, so your breasts are sisters, not twins. They act independently of each other. And I have seen this before. So if your baby is only a few days old, it is possible that one of your breasts has more mature milk and the other one is still transitioning to mature milk. I've seen that, and that's very, very cool. If your baby is a little bit older, it could be that you nursed last on the one side and the other side had a little bit more of a chance to separate in the breast before you expressed your milk. But yeah, that's my initial thought. What about you, Maureen?
Yeah, I mean, what I usually say is when we have greater volume of milk, we have more of that water content, more of the lactose, and that tends to look like whitish, bluish, right? Looks like skimmed milk. When we have sort of more of that cholesterol, some more of those fats, it usually looks a little bit more yellow, and that tends to be the breast with less milk, right? And maybe the one you fed on most frequently.
And I would not say your baby's getting sick. We will see just from our COVID research that sometimes when we have more maternal antibodies, the milk almost looks a little bit green, which is interesting.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. So I don't know. Maybe.
But I think the lesson here is that it actually doesn't matter. All that milk is fine for your baby. Most people have one side that produces more than the other. That's totally common. You can mix those milks together. Not a big deal.
Okay, so this next question is from Susan, one of our patrons. Susan says that she got her period back at 5 months postpartum. Now she's having her second period and it's insane. I'm assuming that means it's like a lot. Please tell me it gets better. I'm wondering how common is it for periods to affect supply? My baby's in a mega growth spurt right now, but seems to be on the boob extra, extra. Does the calcium magnesium supplementation thing actually do anything for period-related supply dips?
Okay. The experience of having some really heavy bleeding and maybe some more pain and things like that with your first few postpartum periods is very common because your hormones are like going crazy right now. This is one of the first times postpartum you've had like a big estrogen rise, you know, and a lot of stuff is happening in your body. You haven't shed your uterine lining in 5 months, right? So things are going to be a little bit out of whack. Most people will have like a handful of weird periods and then they kind of get back to normal. For some people that persists longer. And if you're finding that they're just getting progressively worse or they're not getting better, you can definitely chat with your provider about that.
Yeah, agreed. And the calcium and magnesium thing is really, we're probably a little bit deficient in that anyway. So it's definitely not going to hurt you to take it. And I would try it for, you know, one cycle and see if it helps you.
I don't think we have good studies on it, though. Anecdotally, a lot of people say it helps and it's not going to hurt.
Right. So it'll help kind of keep your supply a little bit more stable. And, you know, we do know that calcium and magnesium do work on electrical impulses with muscle. And your uterus is a muscle. So, you know, maybe it even helps the cramping. But again, I'm pulling that out of my ass. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I've never seen a good data set on how many people's milk supply is affected by menstruation. If anybody knows of a study like that, please email it to us because I would love to read it. I can say, though, in clinical practice and having observed a lot of people, it is not that common that it affects your supply to the point that you have to do something about it. I think it's fairly common that people notice a little bit of cluster feeding around menstruation, but the amount of times I've actually had somebody come in with supply during menstruation as a problem are very few.
Okay. This next question is from a random person that called me while I was pooping the other day because all of my office calls get directly forwarded to my phone.
Did they know that? Did you tell them?
Of course
not. I would have
had
the intrusive thought the entire time to tell them.
Yeah, I know. Well, I couldn't. I didn't have time because I picked up the phone. And I said, "Breastfeeding for Busy Moms, this is Heather." And she says, "Hi, I have a question about breastfeeding." And I was like, "Oh God, okay." Like, it's not even a patient of mine. And she says, "Am I allowed to take pre-workout while breastfeeding?"
You know, which is that question.
And I said, "Well, which one?" You know, now I'm hooked because I'm like, God, and I'm on the toilet, so like might as well. So I was like, "Well, which one?" And she goes, "I haven't picked one out yet." And I was like, "Okay." And she goes, I said, how old's your baby? And she said, 1 month. And I was like, okay, well, I do know that most pre-workout has caffeine in it. So, you know, we do have an episode on caffeine that we will link in the show notes. And I was like, so it's probably fine unless you're also drinking 2 pots of coffee and slamming Monster energy drinks all day and then taking pre-workout. And even then, it's still probably okay, but your baby might have some GI upset and some irritability, especially because they're so small. And also, please get cleared to work out by your provider before you go, like, doing pre-workout and strength training at 4 weeks. Yeah, so also, I just find this hilarious. Does anybody call their any doctor randomly just from the phone book and be like, I got a question about blah, blah, blah? This happens to me a lot.
I get those too sometimes, and they're really funny. But I have to say that I hate that question and all related questions of can I eat or drink this totally normal, like, food thing while breastfeeding, and I know it's like it comes from a place of nervousness and insecurity, and it's fine. I just get so frustrated because I'm like, the simple answer is probably like a 99% yes. The complicated answer is like, let me look at the ingredients. Let me see.
Also, I don't know you.
Usually it's like people I don't know online or whatever, and I'm like, oh God, like. It's probably fine, but if I look at the ingredients, I'm like, I don't know. We don't have studies on all these random supplements, but also, like, who knows? Fine. It's probably fine.
Right. And also, like, I don't have your labs or your history. Like, anyway.
Do you have a baby that struggles with excessive gas, fussiness, colic, and general sleep problems?
Well, I did, but then I used Avivo probiotics.
Avivo is a pediatrician-approved probiotic for babies that's even used in NICUs on the gentlest tummies all over the United States.
It is an amazing, unique product that contains a specific strain of B. infantis that we need to digest human milk oligosaccharides.
That's actually 15% of breast milk that your baby will then be able to utilize, whereas if you don't have the bacteria, there's so much extra in the gut, which is why American babies poop like 10 times a day more than babies that are colonized with B. infantis.
I have personally seen this probiotic help my baby and the babies of many of my clients. And frankly, if we're dealing with any of these symptoms, it is the first thing I go to.
And the best part is, it's not like any other probiotic that we would take when we're sick or taking antibiotics, where you take it every time you go through antibiotics for the rest of your life. If you give your baby Avivo in the first 100 days of life, it actually colonizes in their gut and becomes a part of their immune system, which then they can pass to the next generation. And this is how we make change, y'all. Avivo is amazing because it's going to safeguard your baby's health today and give you peace of mind in the future.
Check out Avivo Probiotics through the link in our show notes.
And enter code MILKMINUTE for $10 off.
Okay, I'm going to pull another anonymous question from our Facebook group. And this person is asking, when does engorgement go away for good? She's 2 weeks postpartum, pumps every 3 hours on the dot because her baby is sleeping, having trouble waking for feeds, falls asleep while feeding, stuff like that. So mostly he's bottle feeding. And, you know, Google told her it resolves in the first week. She's obviously past that and frustrated.
I have an answer. So if you are exclusively breastfeeding, not using a Haka, not pumping, not bottle feeding, then yes, your engorgement should technically resolve in the first week. However, if you are stimulating your breasts artificially in any way, either by itself or in addition to directly latching your baby, you are essentially creating a bit of an oversupply, overstimulation, and we are going to extend that initial engorgement phase beyond 2 weeks sometimes. So I've seen this happen, especially with the Haka. So I love the Haka as a tool for collecting additional milk in the beginning. It's easy to do. Our body often has more than it needs. But I usually try to limit people to 3 ounces extra a day total, not per time. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting 1 ounce every time you nurse and you nurse 8 times, you're getting an extra 8 ounces a day. Do the math on what that looks like after a month. That's right. A lot of milk, folks. So I usually recommend just limiting yourself to 3, and usually that still does extend the engorgement phase, but not beyond 2 weeks. And yeah, it depends on the person.
And the key with being a exclusive pumper or close to it is still being responsive with your milk expression to how much your baby is eating. So trying not to express more milk than that or not significantly more. And I have had cases in just totally normal, like, you know, we're breastfeeding responsively and whatever, where people's engorgement or feeling of engorgement, but not necessarily actually like being so engorged, baby can't latch, you know, they just feel full, maybe hot, itchy, things like that. Sometimes that does last for a couple more weeks because that just comes down to like tissue elasticity and your specific nerves and your specific like neural pathways, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, how much fluid did you have to start with? Were you a 3-day induction that turned into a C-section? Because at that point, you're going to be super fluid overloaded, which is going to tax your lymph system, which is desperately trying to drain all of that extra fluid out. And that process is going to take longer too. So it kind of depends where you start at baseline, how much additional milk you're expressing. And that's it.
Okay. Well, I think that was a really fun lightning round.
Okay, we gotta go. We love you guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Milk Minute Podcast.
The way we change this big system that is really not made to support us is by educating ourselves, our friends and family, and sharing resources like this one.
And don't forget to ask questions. If you found value in the episode that we produced for you today, you can support us for as little as 25 cents an episode at our Patreon, which is our behind-the-scenes VIP club of humans. And you can hit us up at www.patreon.com/milkminutepodcast or our website, milkminutepodcast.com.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye.
It's a Milk Minute.